Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Thomas Powles, MBBS, MRCP, MD, Director of Barts Cancer Institute, and Brian Irini, MD, Professor of Medicine and Inaugural Chief of Clinical Trials at Vanderbilt Ingram Cancer Center, to discuss the correlation between circulating tumor DNA positivity and survival with atezolizumab treatment in high-risk muscle-invasive bladder cancer. In an analysis of the Phase 3 IMvigor010 trial that was presented during the ESMO Immuno-Oncology Virtual Congress 2020, ctDNA positivity identified patients with high-risk muscle-invasive urothelial cancer who were likely to derive improvements in disease-free survival and overall survival from adjuvant atezolizumab versus observation. The DFS outcomes were similar in the ctDNA biomarker-evaluable population compared with the intention-to-treat group. However, ctDNA positivity served as a poor prognostic marker for DFS and OS with hazard ratios of 6.30 and 8.00, respectively. When comparing atezolizumab and observation in the ctDNA-positive patients, however, the median DFS was 5.9 months and 25.8 months, respectively, and the median OS was 25.8 months and 15.8 months, respectively. Results also showed that ctDNA clearance was associated with improved outcomes in the atezolizumab group. Moreover, ctDNA-positive patients with high tumor mutational burden had improved outcomes versus those with TMB-low disease, as well as those with PD-L1 IC2 or 3 expression. In our exclusive interview, Powles and Rini provide insight into this analysis of the IMvigor010 study and its implications for ctDNA as a biomarker in urothelial cancer and beyond.
So we're going to talk about circulating tumor DNA. And Tom, you recently tweeted some exciting bladder data on circulating tumor DNA. I dare say it was your most effective tweet ever, which is a low bar for you. But nonetheless, so Tom, tell us about the methodology of measuring circulating tumor DNA. What are we measuring? What compartment are we measuring in? How tricky is it? Is it the same for all diseases? Some of the basics like that.
There's a difference between circulating tumor cells and circulating tumor DNA.
Right, so CTC is different than ctDNA.
Very different. Yeah. And essentially what we're doing with ctDNA is we're identifying circulating DNA which is related to the primary cancer. And there are two methodologies of doing that. We know that some cancers have a relatively common mutations and we know vaguely what those are, and so we can make a panel-based approach where we look for a series of suspected mutations that we would expect to see in, let's say, lung cancer or breast cancer, and we see if they're there in these particular samples. And that's method A, and that's a panel-based approach. And then there's a second approach, a personalized approach, where we go to the original tumor and we identify mutations from that original tumor using whole exome sequencing. We look at then the germline material and we take away obviously those mutations. So we then identify the somatic mutations and then we track them subsequently in plasma samples.
Second one's harder to do, right? Methodologically.
Harder to do, but it's more personalized because clearly you're going to miss, if you've got cancers that haven't got predictable mutations, you're never going to really be able to track them. You're going to have to, ultimately, I suspect for tracking, it's going to be much more accurate if you're using a personalized approach.
Fair enough.
So that's where we started. And I think the second point to make is that there are different, of course, methods for using these personalized type approach. The method we used was with a company called Natera and they and their technology. So this is a 16 gene personalized approach where we identify 16 mutations and we follow them with time. We did a baseline sample directly after the cystectomy or the first 10 weeks after the cystectomy. And then we did a further sample 6 weeks later, which was either after two cycles of atezolizumab or 6 weeks of no therapy. And what we found was three important things. The first important thing that we discovered was that ctDNA was commonly presented in fact, presented in over half of the patients, you could identify it using this panel-based approach. The second was it was extremely prognostic. And what I mean by that was of the patients that were positive, about 40% of patients are positive. And of those 40% of patients that are positive, those positive patients had the chances of relapse was in the region of about 85-90%.
Wow.
So very high chance of relapse. And if you compare the chances of relapse with the ctDNA negatives, which was only about 25%, that hazard ratio came to 6. So it's a 6-fold increased chance of relapse.
And this is across arms, regardless of treatment or not.
Yes, this is in the observation.
Positive versus negative. ctDNA positive are as high or higher than, say, node positive patients.
Oh, yeah, they're much higher than node
positive.
Striking finding. And I guess the rationale for that is if they're still, after surgery, if there's still this presence of you can identify cancer DNA floating around, there must be cancer cells producing that, and there must be cancer cells.
Did you measure it before surgery at all?
No, we didn't, but we have done that in a neoadjuvant study, which I can talk about at the end. And we have done that actually. And ctDNA positivity, as I said here before, in the post-operative setting, I said it's about 40%. It goes up to about 60% in the neoadjuvant setting. So it's even higher, but you'd expect that because there's residual tumor left behind. So we have measured it in the neoadjuvant setting. I'll say that at the end. And it's higher in the neoadjuvant setting than it is in the adjuvant setting. But the second most important finding, perhaps the most important finding for this trial, was that when you looked at that high-risk population in whom was ctDNA positive, in whom the cancer comes back in 80% of patients, focus on that and look at those patients that received atezolizumab versus those that received observation, the hazard ratio for atezolizumab was 0.58 for disease-free survival, 0.59 for overall survival. Now, the reason why that's really important is we haven't really been able to find adjuvant therapies yet associated with a survival signal. And you'll know that the adjuvant atezolizumab study in the ITT population was unable to show that, even in subsets of patients like node-positive patients or PD-L1 patients or TMB-high patients. So this big randomized prospective study of 800 patients, in that forest plot analysis, that subset analysis, we were surprised that we were unable to find patients associated with poor outcome or predictive factors associated with atezolizumab. Because you might say, well, why are the node-positive patients not getting predictive value or the PD-L1? We didn't find that. But with ctDNA, we did show this relationship. And so therefore, it looks strongly prognostic in terms of a 6-fold increased chance of the cancer coming back, and then a reduction in the risk of death of 40% associated with atezolizumab. And the good thing about the good risk patients is their chance of relapse was small, and their overall survival was actually pretty good in the negative patients. And importantly, there was no separation in the curves with atezolizumab in this group. So there wasn't even a suggestion of benefit. You know, sometimes the curves go a little bit apart and you kind of argue about hazard ratio 0.85. Is it significant? Is it not? You know, this hazard ratio was 1.14, and for survival, for PFS, and 1.31 for survival in the negative group. So it's probably making no difference. I don't think it's any worse, but it looks specific in many respects, and it looks predictive as well as being prognostic.
And it appears to be independent. I don't know if you did the statistical test, but it appears to be independent of our standard clinical factors.
Yeah, Brian, we've done that work. And the work's quite interesting because, you know, what it sort of points towards is two or three things. Firstly, we showed a relationship with PD-L1 expression, and we also showed a relationship with tumor mutational burden. So if you're ctDNA positive and you were TMB high, your hazard ratio in the atezolizumab arm versus observation in the TMB high was 0.34, where in the TMB low was only 0.72. And that same type of relationship was with PD-L1. So there's sort of trend towards the immune biomarker, working in the immune biomarker positive, ctDNA positive. So it's linking the biology. And the last piece of the story is around ctDNA clearance. So I did say at the beginning we did these sequential samples, and you can see a clearance of about 20%. So about 20% of patients go from ctDNA positive to ctDNA negative with atezolizumab, and those patients do exceptionally well, as you would expect. And so essentially pulling it together, you've got a biomarker which is can be measured in real time. And one of the shortcomings with looking at biomarkers associated with the original cystectomy sample, such as TMB or PD-L1 or T-stage, is that when you cut the tumour out and you put it in the bucket, if you've had a really successful operation and there was no spread at all, it doesn't matter how much PD-L1 is expressed, there's just nothing left behind. It's been a good operation. The cancer was done early enough. Right. And so that might be one of the problems with these biomarkers from the cystectomy samples, is it doesn't represent real time, whereas obviously ctDNA represents residual disease, number one. It also it's expressed in the adjuvant setting in about 40% of patients. Those patients we know do really badly, with about an 80% chance of relapse and an increased chance of mortality.
So when you say measured in real time, obviously these were samples sent centrally, so it's not like each site was measuring them.
It was taken in real time, taken and measured in real time.
Yeah, you just mean that it's measuring what's going on in the patient's body kind of right then, as opposed to at some other point. Yeah, what's left behind.
But the technology can be improved, and we can do it in days and weeks in the medium term. So, yeah, that work is being done at the moment.
Question about the 20%, I think you said, who are ctDNA negative, who recurred. Right, yeah. So being ctDNA negative didn't guarantee against recurrence, you know, 20% recur, which is not a super small number.
It's so the recurrence rate is about 30%, and the mortality rate is about 20%.
Yes, that's still fairly high. Is there something about those patients clinically, or is it just a sensitivity of the assay issue? Right, they're probably positive, but you just didn't detect it.
So the way you define positivity is you have to have two or more detectable mutations in the plasma. That's how the cut point is set. And so therefore, totally, there'll be some patients that are missed, and there'll be some patients who are negative who will have a residual disease. And
right.
And that's what
were there patients who were negative right after surgery and became positive?
So yes, there are patients, and those patients, and that's important, because there is previous data to show that if you are negative and then you become positive, you predate relapse on radiological imaging by a significant period of time. So becoming positive is a bad sign.
As it is with CTCs and other diseases, I think.
Yeah, and actually there's a Danish group, and I should mention them, that have done work in the adjuvant setting using this technology in urothelial cancer, and have previously showed that clearing ctDNA is really good. They did a neoadjuvant study. Clearing ctDNA is really good for you, number one. And number two is relapse is predated by the presence of ctDNA.
So where do we go from here? These are highly encouraging data. As you say, a quote-unquote real-time biomarker that's prognostic and predictive, right? That's what we search for, right? Like HER2 status, et cetera. That's exactly what we want in oncology. So we know whom to treat and whom not to. So tell us sort of next steps for this.
Yes, I think this has identified a high-risk group of patients, and I think there is an advantage, in my opinion, in knowing that as it currently stands. But that advantage is only theoretical if there's nothing you can do about it. And I think what this data has showed is, provocatively, it looks like intervention with atezolizumab is associated with a survival benefit. That needs to be caveated with the point that this is exploratory analysis. It's predefined and pre-planned exploratory analysis, but it is still exploratory. And so the question is there any other evidence to support this? Well, yes, we've got some evidence from that biomarker work I talked about before, linking it with the immune biomarker. We've also got that evidence showing that atezolizumab is associated with clearance, and that clearance is associated with better outcomes. We've also done a neoadjuvant study with atezolizumab, which also shows a clearance, and that clearance being associated with good outcomes. So there are two or three, there's a biology piece, there's also two or three pieces of evidence. We've also got the randomized trial associated with the survival signal. So I would say that there is an increasing body of evidence, albeit at the moment retrospective, to suggest that this intervention is going to potentially change the way we look at the disease, at least. And there are other trials that are up and coming in the near future with other agents in the adjuvant setting. But also there is a study called IMvigor011, which is a prospective randomized trial, which is further testing this hypothesis. And when you pull that together, I think it's going to be, my opinion is that that trial will be positive, and that will be enough for us to completely change the way we perceive the post-treatment space, where instead of just going around and picking all patients and giving them a drug, we'll be saying, okay, we now need to work out who's at risk, and we need to work out what treatment's best for them.
The IMvigor011 is adjuvant atezo just in ctDNA positive? Is that what you're alluding to? Or
yes, essentially. Yeah. It's a ctDNA positive study. I think the window for which patients can go in is longer. So it doesn't matter if you become ctDNA positive. You know, in this trial, you had to start therapy within 12 weeks of surgery.
I see.
Whereas what you could do is you could extend that period ultimately until you become, and you can continue to follow patients up until they become ctDNA positive. And the likelihood is, in bladder cancer, that waiting till the cancer's come back on the CT scan is too late for most patients. We knew in the Danube trial, the frontline metastatic durvalumab trial, best response to therapy for most patients in the upfront setting with immune checkpoint inhibitor was progression of disease. And progression of disease in bladder cancer is bad news. So waiting till you can see the cancer is too late for bladder cancer. And so I think this big issue with ctDNA is it's giving doctors and patients the opportunity to identify these cancers much earlier and catch them in time. You know, Brian, you do a lot more kidney cancer, you do bladder cancer. One of the nice things about good risk kidney cancer is you don't always have to jump in immediately. In bladder cancer, if you don't jump in immediately, you're going to lose the patients.
Yeah, there's no such thing as indolent bladder cancer, I don't think.
There's no such thing as come back in 3 months with a CT scan, it might be all right.
Right.
That discussion is not on the table. You know, that gets you patients into a lot of trouble very fast.
Yeah. So promising exploratory data, certainly a hypothesis generating, prospective investigation planned. And maybe we can sort of wrap up. Last question is, you've kind of alluded to this throughout, is in the neoadjuvant setting where we struggle to deliver platinum-based therapy, even though there's a modest survival benefit, et cetera. Is this a tool we can use to, I don't want to say better select patients, because right now I think everybody eligible should be getting platinum-based neoadjuvant therapy, but can it be used clinically to maybe, I don't know, increase delivery of that, identify patients, if that makes sense?
I think it's a really good question. The issue in the neoadjuvant setting with ctDNA, and we showed this data at IBCN, the IBCN bladder cancer meeting relatively recently with a neoadjuvant study of about 40 patients, so much smaller. Remember, what I've just talked about is prospective study with hundreds of patients that were included in a predefined statistical analysis plan. It's about as robust as you can be for a retrospective analysis. The neoadjuvant story is slightly different. And what it showed is a higher proportion of patients with ctDNA positive, as you'd expect. But really intriguingly, we showed similar results to the adjuvant setting. And we showed that atezolizumab was clearing a significant proportion of patients, about 20%. And that clearance was associated with a great outcome. And then we also showed that after cystectomy, any presence of ctDNA was really bad news. What we didn't do is we didn't give those post-op patients who had ctDNA adjuvant therapy. They only had the cycles of neoadjuvant disease. So we don't quite know about the detail of that. But it should suggest to us that the ctDNA actually does seem to have quite a big, broad role in this perioperative space. And it's probably more useful than radiology.
So you can envision a day where routinely in the clinic, assuming this is sort of easily measurable, that it would be useful across a number of bladder cancer settings or stages.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to jump up and down about this, and I'm being very cautious on purpose because it's easy for people to present their own data and stand up and say, I think it's changing everything, and then, you know. So I've probably done that before, maybe. So I'm being super cautious about what I'm saying. If I had a patient in front of me right now and was asked whether or not I was interested in having their ctDNA result post-operatively, high-risk bladder cancer, the answer to the question is yes, I would.
if for no other reason than prognostication. Forget about the predictive value.
Well, whether I give them a atezolizumab or not is a discussion for a different day.
Yeah, I agree.
And as you know, there's a nivolumab study, and I don't really want to get into that immune therapy discussion right now.
Right.
But as it currently stands, with the data we have in front of us, I would like to know that result because I think it helps patients. I think if patients saw this data that we have in front of us, and this is what the FDA will be nervous about, is if they saw this data, the patients would probably want some therapy now. Now, the question is how we get to that right place, how we transition to make the FDA confident and the EMA confident that we're going in the right direction. But as it currently stands, the science looks compelling, the data looks compelling, and I think it's important information for patients.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science Summits and Institutional Perspectives in Cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air.